Ayo, and here we go. We Talk Comics number 69. We Talk Comics gets dirty. We are down a member. Mo has decided to skip tonight's podcast on moral objections. He's currently converting to Islam. And being the kinder, gentler now, Mo, I don't know how that's going to go for him. But on the podcast, we do have the cream of the crop of the We Talks crew. I'm Chris, and here we have Brett. Brett, what's your favorite porn of all time?
Wow, my favorite porn of all time. That's a hell of a good question. I don't know that I've really watched one in 20 years or anything like that, but what would it be? I think there was one that I think was simply called Sex that occurred quite a while ago, and I seem to remember liking it. It was actually fairly well shot for what it was.
All right. And we also have Keith here. And what is your favorite porn company, Keith?
My favorite porn company? Well, I think you gotta go with the big boys, Vivid. I'm gonna just volunteer that Pirates is a fantastic pornographic film. I once rented it from a Rogers, though, and you keep in mind, the reason why Pirates is 2.5 hours long as a porn is that when you take out the sex scenes, it's still 80 minutes long, and you can release it at Rogers.
You know, I remember that at Rogers, they kept it out with the regular movies up on the top shelf, and I always wondered what it was, yet it looked so terrible I never picked it up.
It is a porn film with all the porn scenes removed.
So that means all the story, none of the action.
That's right. All of the pizza delivery guy turns up. They don't have any money for the pizza. Pizza delivery guy leaves.
Oh, that truly sounds awful. But now it's time for a regular feature. The news with Cub Reporter K, sponsored by Comicosity. If you can't wait a week for the news with Cub Reporter K, it's probably on Comicosity already.
Well, I hope so, since he gets all the news from Comicosity, right?
Do indeed. Well, news time. Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle happened last weekend, and I will say kudos to them for putting up so many of their panels streaming online. I spent the weekend watching live comic book panels, DC, Marvel, Spotlights, amazing content, and they had a ton of it for free on their website. It was amazing. Some of the big announcements to come out of Emerald City. Ray Fox will be headlining a new title, one of the last DC Wave 6.5, whatever they're up to. Trinity of Sin Pandora will launch in June, and they will be, at that point, renaming Phantom Stranger, Trinity of Sin and Phantom Stranger to go with that. So, now this reporter's gut instinct question will be right around the corner. The third of the Trinity of Sin that doesn't have a title.
That makes sense from what little I know about it. Trinity of Sin. Now, so is that, does that mean that they're just going to rename it for the Trinity crossover, or is that kind of a long-term plan, do you think?
Well, that's actually the term that was used in the Free Comic Day story that came out that told the origin of Question Pandora and Phantom Stranger that came out last May.
Right.
And they at that point were referred to as the Trinity of Sin. And then those last two pages of that special, of that Free Comic Day, was the tease for the Trinity War, which is coming up sometime this year. Still isn't on the books. Possible that it's the September surprise.
And really, who holds a crossover that long? It's possible we'll review one of those.
You jumped ahead to the end of the episode when we get into the reviews. I did have a laugh that someone was complaining about that it seemed to be so long before they were getting to the Trinity War. in the same week that another war is finally happening. Well, it's not even called a war anymore. I presume because every other war has already happened.
Yeah.
It's an age now, which is how long it's taken to get here. We have a title for the Scott Snyder, Jim Lee Superman. You guys heard this? You heard the title?
I think I did.
Okay.
No.
I want your immediate gut reaction when you hear this title. Superman Unchained.
Van Halen Unchained.
I am having a gut reaction. It's definitely centered in the gut. Yeah.
I actually like Trinity of Sin more. So that's
I mean, Trinity of Sin sort of tells a story all in its own. Superman Unchained, I just think of when was Superman chained and why would we chain him? And
he's how never long been did a chained
character. It's a ripoff of a Hercules thing that didn't make sense back then either.
And how long did it take him to get out of the chains? He's Superman, for God's sakes.
Well, I mean, my thought went to that iconic image of Superman busting the chains when he's, you know, stretching his chest, which is, you know, there's a Siegel image of that.
Yeah, and it is. It's totally classic, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any sense unless they're killing Lois Lane in that particular series.
Well, I mean, I suppose if they go with something similar to that Injustice.
Superman goes to Las Vegas. Axel Braun gets involved.
Superman and Scam crossover. There we go.
That you're thinking of Superman Chained. This is totally different. Totally different. Thinking of Superman Wonder Woman Chained.
I'm sure that there's lots of stories that that will fit with our topic today with Superman and Wonder Woman and chains. But,
definitely Wonder Woman stories.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the way they were all written originally.
We've got a tweak to the creative team of Larflees coming up in June as well. Now, we had talked about this book that it would be written by Keith Giffen. He's being joined by J.M. DeMatteis, putting the band back together.
Oh.
DeMatteis has been scripting Phantom Stranger the past couple issues.
I would, I don't know. Like, after reading, it's funny because after reading the storyline, the Rise of the Third Army, I was kind of like, why the hell does Larflees get his own book? I don't even remember him being that interesting in the book, but you know, what do I know?
Yeah, as long as they don't try to capture the exact same magic they had in the past and try something new together, I'm all for it. Could be really interesting.
Well, they're always getting back together for something. Like they did a 5-issue Defenders miniseries, a while back, probably like close to 10 years
ago.
Yeah,
but once again, they were retreading on their old Justice League turf. Just
absolutely.
When they got back together and got the whole Justice League back together. I want something new from these guys. I've read the Justice League. I love the Justice League, but I don't necessarily need to go back there, especially in the new 52 universe.
All right. More Emerald City news. Following this month's issues of Batman, which the Batman family, which will be in general dealing with the fallout from Batman Inc., Scott Snyder has said that for the next year, Batman will not be tying in with the other books. He has a 2-issue tribute to Batman the Animated Series, which will be issues 19 and 20 of Batman. Something to lighten things up after, you know, a month of funeral scenes. And then a 10 or 11 issue self-contained arc that he says is his new Black Mirror story. It will not be a crossover event. It will be a self-contained story that only runs a Batman. And This is presumably the Riddler story he's been talking about for a while.
Add one to the pull list for me. Batman needs.
I was glad to hear that this one's getting out of event land. Like that's been bogging down these books for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that big a fan of it. I mean, that's the problem. Like, you say something like that, and even though I'm not that big a fan, I suddenly think to myself, oh, that sounds interesting. Maybe I would read that and stuff. But man, I mean, 10 or 11 issues, that's a long time to get to that payoff.
And let's face it, the animated series is probably some of the best Batman we've ever had. And pulling that as a tribute right there, I think, is really kind of exciting.
I mean, it seems a good idea.
There was a great moment at the new 52 panel where Scott Snyder was geeking out because he had finally met Paul Dini at Emerald City. What else we got? Well, we got one more big story. Just launched here on Wednesday, New Comic Day, Comixology's Submit. Now, they tested this last fall. We talked about it a bit last December, when they were testing this platform. They've now expanded it out. This is the self-publishing platform for independent comic creators. This is the game changer. This is the ability for people who have professional quality books to submit them on Comixology and start making money. They're putting as few barriers in this as they can. In the first wave of books, we've got a standalone story by Becky Cloonan. We have Scam number 1 from Comics Tribe, and Tiger Lawyer number 2 are all in this first go. Those are ones we've talked about before. Tiger Lawyer was one of the books when this was being tested last fall, and I was happy to buy it then, even happier to buy it today when it's showed up totally by surprise. And we got some Too Much Coffee Man. We got Man Called Axe from Marv Wolfman.
Wow, that's back again.
Yeah, it's that was one of the Bravura titles. But yeah, the creator, they own the rights to it. So this opens up some of those '90s properties that have disappeared because of sketchy rights from Malibu and other companies that are gone. As long as the rights are completely held by the creator.
Guys, does anyone have extra credit card? Mine just melted. Yeah, it's going to cost me some money, man. I'm excited about that.
There's some really cool graphic novels, and there's a lot of 99 cent and $1.99 comics on there.
That's fantastic. I mean, like, that's one of my favorite elements of that is the price point, because just to be able to jump on and read, quality books at a 99 cent or $1.99, I mean, it's almost way less hit and miss than the $3.99 and $4.99 comics.
But you wonder if a company like Monkey Brain is going to survive in this climate, or are the creators just going to move their stuff over there, because there's no longer any advantage in publishing through a publisher.
It does, it changes things. I mean, certainly this is a lot like the movie industry, the music industry 10 years ago. Publishers had to change what they were doing. Music producers had to become publicity houses as opposed to distribution centers. So I'm excited to see what kind of changes we get and what kind of content we'll be seeing as this rolls out. Certainly the biggest challenge is always, right now the biggest challenge facing these creators will be driving the eyes to their page on Comixology, because this is going to be a crowded field right away. And that's the news.
Oh, that's pretty good news.
Yeah, it was happy news this week.
Yes.
All of that was upbeat. All right, well, are we ready to get into this week's topic?
Well, I don't know if we're ever going to be ready, but we're going to do it anyways.
I gave an advance warning to Aaron Long, editor-in-chief of Comicosity, that this episode will be rated M for mature. It'll be rated T plus using the DC model.
Yep, Mo did ask if there was any way that we could keep it PG-13, and I'm like, well, we took a bigger step towards that by not having him on the show.
Okay,
isn't
so
it funny, the guy who usually wants to swear on the podcast skips this one.
Yeah.
So okay, I'm gonna make it. So if I pick out a scene where Cherry Pop-Tart is sucking on a guy's winky.
Oh, what was it? There was one that what was it that I read in it was in Alan Moore's Lost Girls that it was referred to as. I forget what it was. Yeah, definitely.
All right, so it is episode 69.
We're a classy fellows.
And we are a classy bunch, so how could we mark episode 69 except with doing our long-awaited, what's the opposite of requesting?
I go with feared. I've been fearing this one since about 62 when I realized we always said we'd do the dirty one at 69.
Just the way you said that made it sound dirty.
Let's start off with, now I was saying this on Twitter, we're not talking about mature readers' comics. I want to make that clear. What we're talking about is adult comics that aren't necessarily mature.
Most of them very much
pretty,
so.
This is a pretty broad. What was the first dirty comic you read, Brett?
You know, I can't remember the name. I think it was right around the time that that we had just bought the store, and somebody had ordered. I think somebody had ordered some of the Eros comics in, and so, and then they didn't wind up picking them up. So I wound up grabbing them and reading like three of them, and I was, you know, and I know that. That afterwards, I wound up just on a lark. I bought a couple of the porn star ones from the time that were those fantastic. I think it was almost like origin of the porn stars, and I'm sure that the origin was completely, you know, true. But it was one of those. It was kind of surprising, you know. It was like, really, you put this in comic books? Hey, well, I guess I kind of knew that stuff existed, but this went further than that, so. So I don't remember specifically the name. I doubt that I still have them. I probably just recycled them because, oddly enough, they're not the kind of thing I would go back to read very often.
No, actually, mine was like really early in my comic book development. My my store had a special section, and they had a photo comic book. And I have to say it was one of the worst comic books I ever read in store. It was published by Penthouse. But some photographer got an idea they could reenact the story on a, not on a set, just white backgrounds in his studio. So it was a girl with a gun pointing at a rock, and then a girl with a, and they tried to tell a story, but because it was photos, they couldn't actually use balloons. So there was no dialogue whatsoever. It was a terrible comic book. And thankfully, that colored my impression of all porno comics for my entire life. I have to say, as a teen, I was thirteen-ish. I was a big, like, whenever you're in a Mac store or a convenience store, I'm sneaking over to see the porno stuff. But in the comic book store, I never did that because I did it once, and it was like, okay, I get that is, but my time is valuable here. I'm in the comic book store. I only get here once a week. I got to do comics with that. I can't worry about that porn garbage over there. I'll do that at I'll go to Max later or something because it's closer to my house.
There's better ways to get porn than comics.
Yeah, I think. Really, we need. I need to I only have 20 minutes to make my selections, and I mean, but that was the time Dark Knight and stuff was coming out, man. The, you know, the best comic book time in the world. So, man, I didn't want to miss a thing, and I had a limited amount of time. Keith, how about you?
I actually think it was when I was working at a comic store, and there was a box that was under the counter that we never showed to anyone. I don't know what the plan was for this box, because I think I showed it to two customers in 2 years that I worked at that store. But it was probably Cherry Pop-Tart. Would have been one of the first things that I encountered. I would have read heavy metal before that. But I just don't have a lot of memory of reading. I'm sure that I read heavy metals, but they never stuck in my mind the way that's at.
Yeah, heavy metal does that. Isn't that funny about heavy metal? I've read several. In fact, when I first moved here, I didn't have a constant supply of comic books, and I hadn't worked out a mail order deal or something. So if I ran out of comics between my trips home or to the city, I'm addicted to comic books, so I'd start jonesing. And heavy metal was the only thing that was on the stands. So I ended up reading several of them, and I can't remember one story. Completely forgettable. I remember thinking, like, this is great art, and then turning the page, and the story would end, and I don't remember. The only image I can actually think of is the Simon Beasley Flack 2 painting of Julie Strain.
Yeah, it's fine. I just have this picture of you with, like, a heavy metal with, like, a brown paper bag around it or something like that.
You know, it's difficult, because people don't get what heavy metal is, even in the stores. So if you go into a conserve-type store, you know, they put it on their shelves because it's technically not porn. And they don't keep it with the porn, yet when you buy it and you bring it up to the table, it does have that, like, black bar against the cover most months, because there is nudity on the cover, usually.
Yes.
And I don't care how you put it on the counter, the boobs slip out.
I think it's designed, the bags are designed to make that happen. As soon as you lay it down the counter.
Yeah, I've tried to read heavy metal, but again, it's just never connected with me in that regard. I'm sure there are people who read heavy metal who have read lots of heavy metal, and I just never saw the real. Like, I know there are really good stories in there in some places, but I just don't think that there's a lot of enough for me.
But I've always thought of it as a poor man's 2000 AD, because that has beautiful art and it's an anthology title. But I find the stories compelling, and I don't think they've ever put an emphasis on story, which is too bad, because I actually think Kevin Eastman, who owns the magazine, is a great talent, and I've never quite understood why he wouldn't value story more heavily.
Maybe it sells better with boobies?
Well, I'm not saying they can't have boobies. I like the art. I'm just asking if, like, why can't they add this extra element of quality? If you're going to pay top dollar for artists, which they obviously do.
I mean, there's no question the artists are amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, my favorite part of that, reading those, was always getting to the ad section where they were selling the art books of these people's art, and they'd give a couple sample photos and like that, and I'd always consider getting one, but once again, I like writers. I like stories, and like Keith said last week, I can read a comic book with a bad artist, but I can't read a comic book with a bad writer. I'm paraphrasing badly.
that's all right. I'm sure that that our listeners have already made a T-shirt out of my out of my quote, so they could just. I mean, you're reading it upside down because you're listening, because you're wearing it while you're listening, so that's going to be problematic. Yeah.
They just made two T-shirts out of Chris's version of your quote.
And halfway, a third of the way through Chris's T-shirt, it says, "Wait, that's not. Let me go back." So let's talk about some specific books here, and we looked at a couple of kind of mainstream of the not mainstream. Certainly the book that got the most press last year as a dirty book was Black Kiss 2. I did not make it to the end of Black Kiss 2, I've got to be honest. I made it to I happened upon my review on Comicosity a couple of days ago of Black Kiss 2 number 2, which probably holds the record on Comicosity for the lowest review, let alone me, when I gave it a 0.5 out of 10, which was really just an acknowledgement that it was a comic. Where were you? Did you guys read anything further than number one of Black Kiss?
No.
Actually, the most interesting thing I found out about Black Kiss 2 was listening to Howard Chaykin summarize the series at the Seattle Con this week, and it bore no resemblance to the issue I read.
I heard that too. It was at the Putting Graphic in Graphic Novels, which was a fantastic panel. Howard Chaykin, Fiona Staples was on that panel, and it was fantastic. But when he summarized Black Kiss 2, I'm like, really? That was what I read, two issues of it, and that still doesn't sound like a third of what you just said.
Perhaps you should read just issue 6.
I was wondering if he was talking about a different Black Kiss, if there was a mistake at the publisher.
Is he doing a third series?
There was something different than what he was saying there.
They were aware that it was not available in Canada, though, print copies. The copies of the book stopped making it in Canada at issue number 2. I don't know if any other issues made it. I read digital, so, I mean, digital, they don't stop the order. our internet laws are, despite being the Socialist Republic, Canada, our laws are not that draconian.
But we're
draconians, we're socialists.
Yeah, but our government currently believes it's the 70s, so we're a little behind the times occasionally.
Comics be 35 cents again?
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
So that's Black. I like the original Black Kids. The original Black Kids is outrageous. It was pushing the boundaries in the 1980s. I think that maybe that's the problem with Black Kiss 2, is that he's trying to push the boundaries today, which just comes off like shock value. And, you know, maybe at the time that's all Black Kiss would have seemed like. It was just shock.
You know what? I liked it at the time. However, when I reread it before Black Kiss 2, I did go, okay, he's been having some sort of sex with this woman for a substantial time, and he never happened upon that huge member. And I'm sorry, it's a spoiler, but I mean,
it's a spoiler. What was 20-year-old
it? Four
girl.
Issues.
But
she pulls a ham out of her pants. And he never noticed? I mean, that thing was so large.
Wasn't he a detective,
it looked
too?
Like she had an accident. It was huge.
Was that the detective? I mean, the guy who was supposed to have keen observation skills?
Yes, he was a detective. And I wonder how I, like, that huge gaping hole in the plot. I don't know how I bought it back then, and I certainly don't buy it now.
I'll tell you, it certainly sounds nothing like the first issue that I read of the second one.
No.
That was a lot of severed penises. Podcast number 2. I don't remember a book, you know, pre-Flashpoint or post-Flashpoint at DC having that many severed penises.
I can't imagine it doing anything for their sales.
Oh, we gotta have a contest, man. We gotta have a contest or something where people can write in and suggest books with more severed penises than Black Kiss. Maybe there's a Severed Penis Illustrated out there or something.
There's got to be a manga that has.
Oh yeah, yeah. If it's going to be anything, it's going to be a manga.
Oh, we don't want to tell you. Sorry, I take all that back. We don't want to hear from those people.
That's not the favorite list I want to end up on. People who talk about comics, people who talk about movies, people who talk about seven penises. That is not the news feed I want on. Let's talk a little about Cherry Pop-Tart. This is a classic. This published about 25 issues over the course of about 25 years.
That's a pretty impressive schedule that he maintained.
Pretty much a delay every time he said to start fighting lawsuits. One of the things people may not know, one of the issues written by Neil Gaiman, one of the final issues. This book, if you haven't encountered it, Cherry Pop-Tart was created in the late 1970s as a parody of Archie comics. So it very much looks like that cartoony open art that Archie has always had. Cherry is a young woman of legal age. Of consenting legal age. I don't think they actually ever said how old she was. She is of consenting age. They always specified that. Who lives with a single mother and has some single friends. Cherry occasionally had a boyfriend when the plot called for it. That's as much plot as there is to Cherry Pop-Tart.
Plot that was in Archie, and that's carried on for a couple years.
That's true. Now the thing that separates Cherry Pop-Tart from Archie is ridiculous amounts of sex, like a lot. And this isn't Midge and Moose and the door closes. This is a graphic comic.
This is Midge and Moose involving the door. Yeah.
That's right. Reggie and Moose finally make a deal, and Midge is okay with it.
Yeah.
There's some pretty extreme stuff in this book.
The orgasm-powered time machine was one of my favorites.
I think everyone needs a moment just to take that in. say that again, Chris, just so people don't have to rewind and go, what? Did I just hear that?
The orgasm-powered time machine was one of my favorites. It was basically a pummel horse with a large phallic extension, and you couldn't ride it with pants.
I think Howard Stern has one of those.
It's a time-traveling Sibian, that's right. And I believe that was the story that established that that Cherry Pop-Tart's dad was either Thomas Jefferson or George Washington, I think is where that story went. That one of the founding fathers, due to time travel, was Cherry Pop-Tart's father.
I believe there was I believe she also makes love to a Sasquatch / Ape Man in that particular issue. But it was a good issue. I'm kind of hoping that was one by Neil Gaiman, because there certainly were some duds in that run, but that one always stands out for me.
Well, that one's definitely not a dud. That's a classic. No. The Neil Gaiman issue was Cherry Deluxe, I believe, was the issue, which was published in 1998.
And I'm completely unfamiliar. I might have read it and wasn't paying attention. Is he credited?
He is indeed. He's cover credited, actually. Yeah, and yeah, this would have been after Sandman. This would be related to Gaiman's work with the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Gaiman's always been very active with that organization, and certainly Larry Welts, who created Cherry, has had to avail himself of their services on more than one occasion.
Now, what the lawsuits involving Cherry, have they all been, to your knowledge, of course, because none of us are lawyers or experts in comic book expertise. Were they all lawsuits involving indecency or nudity, or were there rights issues or anything like that involving Archie or something
I don't believe there was ever anything to do with rights issues. I think it was all books being seized, moving stuff across borders, things like that that would have been the problem. These books are surprisingly easy to come across. They were one of the most common adult comics all through the 90s. So and they stayed in print. That was another odd thing about these, is that you didn't have to try to dig out 500, like one of 500 copies that was produced in 1977. All of these books stayed in print through the 90s. In the Diamond catalog, you could order every issue that was available any month. So quite unusual as far as that went. The shelf life of these books is pretty impressive.
Well, it's like Archie in that way, I think. But I think for me, Cherry Pop-Tart is one of those, is exactly what I picture of an adult book. You know, copious amounts of sex, a parody-esque style of an existing story, and basically just, you know, silly, fun, you know, romp type stories. That's what I pretty much expect out, like when I kind of sat down to go through a bunch of these, that was really what I expected to get out of virtually everything. And I think I was most surprised to see that is not what I got out of everything. So yeah, the bar was kind of set by Cherry Pop-Tart.
Everything has to be weighed against Cherry Pop-Tart as far as Outlaw Comics go. So what else stands out for you guys as... Well, you mentioned Lost Girls. Well, let's go with Lost Girls. Now, this is... I rather awkwardly had to order this book on Amazon for my father-in-law. So that's my story related to Lost Girls. I ordered it, and I'm like, oh, I want more. Maybe I should look. Oh, my God! What have I just done? And then, you know, 40% concerned that he didn't know what he was getting, and 60% concerned that he did.
Yeah, I believe that.
So, is he a comic book reader? How did this come about, this order?
He is, actually.
Oh, yeah, okay.
A very light comic book reader.
Yeah, because so, yeah, Lost Girls is not the first place I go. I've had a look at Lost Girls, and I firmly place it right next to the Tom Strong stuff that, you know, it's good, but I'm not picking that up.
Well, it was certainly one of the books that I looked at as, I've avoided this one for a very, very, very long time. As much as I really like Alan Moore, I've always wondered about the thought of, like, you know, I know what Alan Moore can be like. And when he writes stuff that like is in his mind that he really wants to write and stuff like that, then he can go kind of nutsy crazy and not really go anywhere that I'm interested in. And so, you know, I sat down to read this and you know, the first 40 pages I was just like, what the hell is going on? There's nothing here. This is complete pretentious garbage. The last 60 pages, I was actually like, oh, I kind of get where he's going, and it's kind of interesting now. So it's both one of the single greatest adult comics out there, and at the same time, one of the single most pretentious pieces of crap I've ever read. So I'm not sure which side to fall on that one.
Actually, his new series, Nemo, much the same. I'd check it out if I were you, Brett. Not anything to do with sex. It's not a dirty comic book. It's just Alan Moore.
Just as usual.
Pretentious, but well-written.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what's going to go on the gravestone. Pretentious, but well-written. Also, he hated everything else that was on the shelf that week. I've tried reading this book a couple of times. The art doesn't thrill me. It's better
the 60 pages. Like, honestly, I think skip the first 40 pages. Go right to the back 60. Because even maybe the back 50. You're way better off. The art actually gets to a point where I see things in the panels. And it was almost like I was reading a different book. The first half was, you know, I was just completely bored. And the second half was interesting. And so I'm like, maybe, I don't know, maybe the sex was better in the second half or something like that. But...
Yeah, it's about halfway. It's about 20 or 30 pages in that we have the first sex scene, and it kind of reminds me of Kama Sutra and sketch Kama Sutra sketches. It's not really anatomically correct. You know, the proportions are a bit off and such. It does look like that. you know, those paintings of what a sex scene is supposed to look like as opposed to a sex scene.
Well, and I think he's, because of the era that it takes place, they're trying so hard to make the women more, I forget the term, but like, you know, robust in this fashion. I know there's...
Rubenesque.
Rubenesque! There you go! That's the one that we're going for. Thank you.
Word power. Now, another book around the same time as Cherry is... a book I actually never read at the time. I wonder if you guys did, Omaha Cat Dancer.
Okay, this is the one that this week we passed around some porn comic books from all our collections that that I had never read, but I am... this one got me kind of... I love this book. I would have read this one without any porn connections whatsoever. The story kind of got me. I really felt the connection to the characters. Really good. I loved it.
Well, that's actually what struck me, was the fact that I think I understand, like, the reason that they chose to make it with the sex was because the sex was one way for this book to stand out in a wide open field of this kind of book. Like, the funny animal books, at the time that they originally produced it, that was all the rage. So the concept of suddenly throwing sex in there, they could make the stories based on it. Like, this is one of those ones, and I agree with you totally, Chris, that I love the concept because it suddenly became a book not about, you know, having a story that facilitates sex. It became having some sex that facilitated, you know, the characters in the story. Like, but you could take the sex right out of it, and you wouldn't miss it.
I found it very crumb-like, but rather than 5 or 6 pages, I got invested in the story. So, I never thought I'd like it this much, and I really do. If this was a regular series today, it would be right on the pull list. But as it is, it's published, and I don't think we'll ever see more.
They're probably fighting more legal battles. Did you read it, Keith?
I've read the first couple of chapters of it, and it was an interesting story. I mean, it is quite graphic. I'm trying to find a... I'm looking for a polite way when we don't have to be polite on this episode. look at the tits on that cat.
Cat's fucking has never been more appealing.
Well, and this is one of Mo's points when we were talking about this really quickly, and I think this is a good one to talk about that with, is why is it that so many of the lead characters, the lead females, are young and innocent? Like, we read some of the other ones that I think the more mainstream style books, and the characters are not young and innocent at all. But in a lot of these, you know, truer adult ones, the characters are very, very innocent. You know, and Omaha the Cat Dancer, for all of her sexuality, is extremely innocent.
It is one of the recurring themes. I mean, it's certainly something from manga as well. You know, the schoolgirl in danger kind of thing, and that so much of that subgenre is, you know, the innocence that is in these situations. I mean, in the case of Omaha or Cherry, Cherry's not that innocent, but she has a facade of
I think the artwork
looks like that makes it look, appear more innocent than it is.
But isn't this just a trope of porn rather than porn in comic books?
That's a fair comment. Yeah.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm sure there's... I know that there's lots of you know, barely 18 or whatever the hell it is.
Oh, porn. Well, there is a character from a more recent dirty book that is not a young and innocent character. That would be Amanda Connors, The Pro. It's script by Garth Ennis. Inks by Jimmy Palmiotti. This was this has been published by, I think, 3 different publishers have printed this now.
I own all 3.
I'm not surprised about that.
3 times.
Thinking they were sequels? Or just you like it that much?
No, no. They put the backup story in a second one, and then my second one, then I bought the hardcover in the last edition.
Oh, I didn't know
that. The Pro Meets the Ho is the backup story. And
wow.
Those four pages were definitely worth my extra $30. I'm a Garth Ennis fan. What can I say? And yet, Joel McRae in there, I love that shit.
And you know, and if you haven't bought it enough, Chris, the Pro is only $4 on Comixology.
Sweet, so there you go.
So if you aren't yet exhausted giving Amanda Connor and Garth Ennis money for the Pro, there's yet another way.
You know, I may not be done, actually. I can never find a copy when I want it. I love the Pro.
Tell people the plot of the Pro, Chris.
There was a plot?
give the synopsis of the narrative weight that is the Pro. This is like it's kind of precursor to the Boys in a lot of ways. You could put this easily with
totally.
The Boys.
Yes, I always actually imagined that the Pro went the Herogasm.
I thought the Pro was a great add-on to the list of things that we were trying to run down because it was the one thing that really touched on superheroes. I mean, we had lots of other things, like we had the Archie style, we had the funny animals, we had the fantasy and stuff, we had the bondage fairies kind of manga thing. You know, but superheroes. We didn't touch on superheroes. And because Chris isn't going to do it, I'll say,
oh,
like,
no,
so
I was,
we...
I was getting around
okay,
to it.
Go
I was
ahead.
No, it's about a professional sex worker who gains superhero powers and joins a super team. And it turns out that, yeah, she's a professional sex worker and not really a superhero despite having superpowers. That's really the extent of the story. She thinks these people are rather silly going around saving stuff and keeping all their sexual demons hidden and like that. It's just sex, and that's her attitude towards it, and that's what I kind of like about it. And her life sucks because of it, but who cares? She's a hoe.
I thought you were going to stay with sex worker that whole time without ever using the H word.
I totally approve of the fact where she starts to utilize her superpowers to make more money for herself, not by superheroing, but by blowing guys that much faster. Fantastic character. Like, I mean, it's not a graphic book in the same way that a Cherry Pop-Tart is, but it's definitely a dirty book.
And I mean, you do have Superman spunk take out an airplane, which is kind of funny.
That is a great scene.
Yeah, move your head now.
Before we exit this topic that I hope for the listeners at home, we've made you as uncomfortable as we have felt doing this episode. Keep in mind that Mo couldn't make this one.
Well, I'm sure that there's lots. You know, just to tack on a little bit more uncomfortable. The funny thing is, we called this episode, you know, or the number of this episode is 69. And there's obvious sexual connotations to that number, but I was shocked at the volume of 69ing that goes on in these adult comics. It's just like, is there anything else that you do other than this?
I've just remembered, as you said that, I remembered the actual first sex scene I saw in a comic. It was earlier than Cherry Pop-Tart. It's like, it's just dawned on Camelot 3000.
Wow.
It is the 12th issue of Camelot, the final issue of Camelot 3000. And there wasn't a whole lot of sex in that book, but there.
Wait,
there,
I thought that came out like last month. There was a delay in this.
It ran a bit behind. That's true.
I can't leave this topic without mentioning my favorite scene from The Boys, that a vibrator bomb being used by a little person takes out the entire plane. Now, that's just genius writing. Not everyone can come up with that shit.
You know, I don't know how we could leave the topic without touching on a bondage fairies or something like that. I mean, the truth of the matter is that the one thing that I do want to talk about quickly is the fact that why is it that those comics are so fucked up?
Well, we get a whole, there's a whole subgenre of non-human sex comics. Now, we talked about Omaha. You just mentioned bondage fairies, and that bondage fairies has gotten a bit of attention outside of comics because the aesthetic of the bondage fairies caught on. A friend of mine who I think at some point would have read the comics, but I don't know, actually has a tattoo of a bondage fairy on his arm. And then we've got things like, you know, the funny animal books. A lot of the underground books had you know, sex scenes with animals. They're a whole separate genre of these non-human sex scenes. What I found really kind of troubling when I read a lot of these was that that's where the really violent sex stuff seemed to be. And I don't know whether that was because you can skip past some of the legalities if you're not using humans. I don't know, like, or if you're already in animals, you might as well go all the way. No pun intended. But some of the, like, I think it was Big Funnies was the name of the book that we had that had all the funny animal stuff, underground comic, and...
Was that the one with the horses? That
was the one with the horses and the, wow. And the cockfighting, yes.
That was only, wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to say cockfighting, but horses were the only thing involved. There were no... chickens of any sort. So take from that what that scene is for yourself. It's a penis sword fight.
I didn't mind the cockfighting. It was the implied rape right before that that I...
Yeah, that really was upsetting. Yeah.
Just glossing over that, the most offensive thing.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the scene is that they're about to rape a sleeping cow. What was it? Was it a cow or was it also a horse? It was another animal.
I don't know. Animal.
Nope. And they woke up
by the immense horse penises. So
and then she woke up, and the resolution of this is, well, the two of you are going to rape me. Only one of you gets to have sex with me. That was the and again, pun not intended, the thrust of the scene.
That's a trope in a lot of these anthropomorphic animal books, and I'm not saying that this one is the example I'm necessarily drawing upon, but I always took that bondage and masochism stuff in those comic books as a carryover from manga.
And I don't know time-wise what the influence was there. I mean, a lot of these kinds of underground comics were coming out of the 60s and 70s. So I don't know, you know, time-wise where manga was at that point.
I mean, I know I've seen some really warped stuff in some of the manga that I've seen.
Yeah, I can't believe there's actually something called tentacle porn as Brett's cat's tail flops into the face.
Not only the tentacle porn isn't a thing, but it's an entire subgenre.
It's huge. You have to make the mistake of typing the wrong word into a search engine, and man, you can... Wow.
You're just innocently typing in the words tentacle and porn. And
exactly.
Same thing happened with Blossom. I never want to go back there. I was looking for the television series, honestly.
I think it's books like those, though, that give these adult books, for me, a bad name. And, like, I actually started reading the Ironwood series by Bill Willingham, you know, finally sat down. And the thing was is that I enjoyed it because at least I thought it was pretty well written for what it was. And that's why I really appreciated Omaha and stuff like that, because these because I just like the stories. I actually like being able to read the books with stories, and okay, they happen to have sex in them. But, you know, these other ones, there is no story, and the sex is graphic and violent and really kind of nasty. You know?
The observation I have, I read about 30 or 40 pages of Ironwood. I had one thing that really stuck out in my mind. Bill Willingham has some difficulties with same-sex couples. Clearly, this is not related to women in same-sex couples, because this book has a lesbian sex scene about every 10 pages. So apparently it's only dudes that he's not okay with.
Yeah. Well, it appears that he figures that the two women having sex is the best thing to sell the book. It does change in the later bit. There's a lot less of it and more of the... Well, there's a centaur later on, let's just say.
Oh, yeah, I did get to the centaur scene, yeah.
There's another centaur scene at the very end.
Okay.
Near the very end. It's pretty funny, actually.
Is that the centaur fellatio scene? Is that the one I kind of skipped around?
Yeah, yes, the one where he gets his head.
I'm giving spoilers out to a book that's like incredibly hard to track down.
Yeah, yes.
By the time you actually find the book, you'll have forgotten that we said the words centaur fellatio. I want that image to sit with you. If you only remember one thing from this episode, I want it to be centaur fellatio.
The centaur fellatio shirts will be coming out. I was able to find a copy of Ironwood. I'm just kind of curious. Brett, you're a regular Fables reader. Did it color anything that happened in Fables for you?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that the thing about Bill Willingham for me is that so much of his stuff is like virtually all fantasy. And the fact is, I think I just get the feeling that this is just something that he tried. It's something that kind of seemed like a natural. It's funny in parts. It's, you know, graphically sexual in parts. It's fantasy stories. There are just elements that kind of lead into Fables, but it's just more of a testing grounds, more so than anything.
Okay, now I'm just wondering if there was a centaur somewhere in Fables that went, uh-oh, I don't like this. Where is this going? Oh, phew, nope.
Yeah, I don't expect to see any kind of that. I think he kind of learned his lesson from Ironwood.
Has anyone read Empowered ever?
Oh, is that the Adam Warren?
I believe it is. I actually don't have a copy in front of me, but a couple months back I picked up a trade. I didn't love it, but I liked it enough. I found the actual concept and how they introduced the nudity quite interesting. That, and it's a trope from comic books that, you know, something that doesn't really make all that much sense is that when somebody gets immunity, when they're invulnerable, their costume becomes invulnerable as well. And that is the entire premise of the comic book, that every time she gets in a fight, her costume seems to get ripped.
That's very similar.
I find that very funny.
It's very similar to Jimmy Robinson's Bomb Queen character. Like, she's written, you know, she's got a very skimpy costume to begin with, like skimpier than Power Girl skimpy. But, you know, there's no question that, like, in a battle, it will get ripped. You're going to see something. Adam Warren, I see, is actually coming to the Calgary Expo this year, so perhaps we'll try to have an interview with him on, and he can try to explain that to us.
And after his Dynamite issue on what was it, Five Weapons?
Jimmy Robinson, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really interested in checking out Bomb Queen.
I think it's funny. Like, no. I was tempted to hand around an issue of Bomb Queen. I just couldn't quite. I just didn't figure that we would have time to read like one of the miniseries. But you know, I find the character pretty interesting, and it's just, again, it's another dirty style book, but with some humor. So I like, one thing I've learned. I know where my dirty comic book reading lies, and I know where it doesn't lie.
I think it comes down to, for all of us, is what comes first, the sex or the comic books. If a good story and a good comic book is there with or without sex, I think we like it. If you start off with let's make something dirty and it'll be a comic book, I don't think any of us is really all that interested in it.
No, I mean, I don't care about sex for sex's sake in a comic book. I mean, if I want that, I got the goddamn internet, I'm fine.
There's porn on the internet?
Well, Mo tells me there is every day. So. But, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the comic books that had good stories, or at least even decent stories, I enjoyed far more than the comic books that were just excuses to toss some dirty bits in.
They'll just toss up anything in these comics.
That's for
now,
sure.
We're gonna wrap this up with one burning question. It was one of the books that got passed around.
Burning question. I hear they have something for that now.
You can get a salve for that. Now this is the only Marvel comic that ended up in this pile. Only Marvel or DC comic that ended up in this pile. The book is Alias, 2001, Brian Michael Bendis. What's the name? Jessica Drew?
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones. Now, opinions. I think if our listeners have not seen the scene, you can easily Google this scene. There's a scene in Alias number one that was quite controversial. Yes or no, did Jessica Jones get it up the bum? Brett?
Yes.
Christopher?
Hell yes, but I have to say that makes the baby they had resulting from that particular romp kind of a strange thing going on. I never actually knew it was a controversy. I just knew it happened because, well, that's what they said happened.
There's also a lot of up the bum business in a lot of these comics. You know, there's a whole lot of, well, I don't want a baby, so...
You know? Yeah, that's a recurring thing in Ironwood. Yeah,
yes.
Well, stuff's gonna happen, and I don't want to have a baby. So, what options present themselves? the answer, of course, is yes. So, that's it for episode 69. There are no other dirty numbers, so we don't have to remember this.
Yes, I won't be returning to these books for a long, long time. We'll do a
send up of it on episode 96, possibly.
Yes, I can forget about this for 30 odd episodes. Yes,
89 sex involving three people comic books. I don't think we can do that.
Back to Ironwood. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to some Wii views.
Yes, Keith. What are we doing? We are...
Here I come to save the day.
We are saving you from bad comics.
And hopefully we did some of that today. But, all right, Keith. So let's see now. What do you think we should start out with? Do you want to start out with the big book of the week?
I think probably we should.
All right. Start us out.
So, big book of the week, the long, I cannot stress enough, long-awaited Age of Ultron book one. Strangely, not number one, book one. This is Brian Michael Bendis, Brian Hitch, inks by Paul Neary. You may recognize about a third of the pages in this book from the Marvel Point One that came out in... what was it, November?
1989, yeah.
A couple of these, the hints to this, the preamble to this actually came out several years ago in one of the Avengers books, two free comic days ago, I think it was, that they teased this. I believe at that time it was Ultron War, although maybe just that name stuck in my head and it never was a real thing. Age of Ultron, the pages that were new, were quite enjoyable. I was a bit choked that there were so many pages that weren't new. For a hefty price tag book, that was a lot of material I've already seen. It's an odd one. There's been a lot of talk about how this book is going to make any sense right now because it was finished so long ago. I mean, Hitch did the first 6 issues, and his work has been done on this book for about 6 months. His deal was only for the first 6 issues. This is a 12 issue. It's interesting. I'm going to get nosebleeds trying to figure out how the rest of Marvel Now fits with this book. The tie-in books are all extra numbered. They're not individual issues of the series. They're numbered 13 AU, etc. The character of Spider-Man doesn't make any sense. Doesn't really sound like Superior Spider-Man. So that part aside, how does it fit into the rest of the universe? Not very well at all. So that part aside, it's beautiful. It's, you know, Brian Hitch is an amazing artist. It's a little over-inked. It's a little kind of gunky at times. There's a 2-page spread that is intentionally photoshopped all the hell I know what they were going for, but it was kind of just a bit overdone. There was a scene where
that was rough. Yeah, the earthquake.
Yeah, the earthquake scene. Yeah, the building is shaking, so the entire page has been shaken. It's been pre-shaken for you, which makes it look like something horrible has happened to your tablet, or that you need to contact Comixology for support. I sort of liked it. I don't think I'm entirely sold on it. Partly because there didn't seem to be a lot of new story in it. Not a lot happens actually. You're kind of given this spot, and it feels like this should have been what happened between the end of the Avengers stuff and Marvel Now. That this should have been some kind of relaunch point, as opposed to a couple months into the relaunch when everyone else is kind of trying to get up to speed. I don't know. I'm inclined to try the second issue, partly to keep myself up to date with where they're going with this, and it's pretty, but pretty unsure about how this is actually going to make any sense to me, or if it's going to mean anything at all. We're going to get to the end with No More Ultron by Scarlet Witch, and the whole thing didn't happen. Brett?
Well, I feel very much the same way that you do. I read it. I was massively confused throughout. It didn't feel like any of the characters were really that right on, ultimately, for the characters. And, yeah, the art was okay, but that one scene, yeah, it just drove me nuts. I didn't even want to read it, because it was just so fake at that point. Like, I don't need that kind of thing out of my comic books. I just don't know what to do with it. I can't imagine carrying on, but at the same time, I'm sort of interested in how it's going to end. So, but it's just not that good.
I'm really surprised you guys are so ambivalent towards this book. I really kind of liked it. Sure, there's problems. I was questioning whether Hawkeye actually kills people, or what the hell is going on in the whole Spider-Man mess. Well, everything that ties into Spider-Man, I don't think anyone was really all that ready for Superior Spider-Man. So there's that for issues. But I will say I was intrigued by this Ultron war world going on. And I think in a couple issues we'll get to see one of my favorite things in all of comic books is the villain's trophy room, when we actually get to see who's fallen and what remnants of the superheroes are left. I love that kind of thing. Lots of rubble, and everyone knows I love rubble.
It'll never be as good as Perez. So.
No, it'll never be as good as Perez, but still, I mean, Hitch does good rubble, so there's that. My only, other than the criticisms that I've already mentioned, I will say that it actually reminded me of the Marvel animated movie Heroes Reborn, where Ultron actually, Avengers Next, Ultron also takes over the world and the heroes have to come back and take him, but once again, they had a trophy room in that, so I just love trophy rooms. But yeah, no, I'm definitely in for two, and I'm actually surprised you got. I mean, this is a high quality book. Of course, I didn't remember that we'd seen most of this before, so.
I didn't either, but it's still.
I tend to skip free previews when Marvel puts them in the back of books. I really don't. I don't dig them unless it's something I'm very, very interested in. And Age of Ultron would not count because I've never been a fan of Ultron. And the last time Bendis got the hold of him, he turned Tony Stark into a woman for 3 issues.
Well, if that's the worst that happens in this thing. I kind of wish I could separate it from what else is going on. And because we talked about last week in the full list episode, the stuff we're liking, the stuff we're not. And I'm turned off anything at Marvel that is too continuity heavy, because I look at, I read Civil War here in December when I read the rest of the Captain America stuff. And I just saw how bogged this stuff can be. And
now, how directly does it tie into anything? I actually read it as sort of an Elseworlds thing, because it does start out in the future. We have no explanation of how the world got to this point.
It does not start off in the future. Right? In fact, the first page of the book says New York City today.
Wow.
Okay, that alternate universe.
Not so far. Maybe it is. So far, it's not.
If it is today, I would assume that it's working in a circular manner, that by the end we'll get back to the beginning, the heroes can erase everything that happened, so I'm not really all that.
At some point they're going to unpack what has happened before this issue, and I'm not complaining that because of the structure that they want to get into the action and they'll tell us later what's happening. It's just this thing's going to stretch on for what, 6 months, and not make any sense with the other books for that whole time.
Yeah,
but is there indeed there isn't crossovers or anything in this book?
Yes, there are.
There are.
Yeah, as I said, they're not individual issues of the books. They're numbered 7 AU. So how you'll sort your books is 7, 7.1, 7 AU, and then 8.
Well, that says it right there. I assume AU is alternate universe.
Age of Ultron.
Yes, I'm assuming they mean they have the double meaning going on there. I have hopes. I try to be optimist on these things.
Well, I'm going to try to stay optimistic with you. I think I have been really enjoying Bendis' work on the X-Men books. So maybe we'll re-review this one, and Mo can hate it, and I'll be on board.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Chris, why don't you review Helheim?
Helheim. Okay, the Colin Bunn book. I was not prepared to do that one. I had a different book all ready to go, but I can go there. Helheim. I believe it's published by Marvel Oni, and it is written by Colin Bunn. And I've seen this. It's a Conan-esque story involving zombies. I didn't hate it, but I didn't particularly. I feel no need to return to the second issue. I kind of found it just standard fare. I don't going to get too many surprises. I don't think there's going to be a swerve. We're going to get a large zombie Conan character killing other zombies for 4 or 5 issues, and that's it. I'm not coming back. If somebody can remind me of the artist, I'd be greatly appreciative.
Joel Jones?
Joel Jones, yeah, pretty sure.
It's got like the little, is that a numeral with the two dots? So it's be dramatic.
Yes.
Joelle.
Well, she is a girl. So
then I'm going to go with Joelle.
Joelle, yes.
Which is, I know, French, not German, but we've got to move on.
That is fine. Well, all right. The thing that I had trouble with Helheim was the fact that throughout the entire thing, I was just more or less thinking, well, this isn't as good as Northlanders. And that was kind of what wound up coloring it for me. Now, I know that there's a lot of people out there who love Cullen Bunn. There's a lot of people who really like his creator-owned stuff, like Sixth Gun and stuff like that. And so there's this part of me that wants to give it a second chance to see if he can do something more, just based on the goodwill that other people have towards him. I didn't think that this was a particularly awesome starting point, but maybe, just maybe, he'll give me something down the road that will make this worthwhile. I'm not 100% sure that I can trust it. I'm not 100% sure I'd remember to pick up the second issue or care that much, but it's not bad. It's just not as good as Northlanders. Keith?
I kind of like this book. There is a swerve at the end of the first issue. I guess maybe Chris saw it coming. I didn't. It has a couple of interesting changes as far as who they're fighting and what's happening in the book. I wouldn't want to see a long stretch in this book. Maybe it's a 4-issue mini. It's the right length. This also would have been a fun graphic novel. So it'll probably read well as a trade, like a one-off. I wouldn't want to see this extended too far. I thought the art was kind of neat. I've been having just read that Becky Cloonan story today. It actually fit quite well together, reading these two things in the same day. I kind of liked it. Price point's a bit high, which is rough. So I'll probably wait a little bit. Maybe digital trade, something like that. Or there's a comic show coming up. it'll be the fall before the trade's out. But
I definitely think it would be a better trade book.
I can't believe you thought that was a swerve. It was more of a mild bend in the road.
It's more of a course correction is what you're saying.
Yeah. Come on. There's zombies.
Right. I think I'll...
That always happens in zombie stuff.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about that. All right, let's move on to the next issue.
All right, Las Vegas? Lost Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Put it down, Keith.
Can I do how few words can I do Las Vegas in? The art's pretty good. Nothing happens. It's a bit talky.
All right.
I'm going to leave it at that.
All right. I'll let Chris wrap it up, and I'll jump in and say, because I don't have that much to say about this either. Ultimately, though, what I thought when I was reading this was, I thought, man, this is a somewhat interesting concept for a story. It's just a real shame that it's done by somebody who can't write and can't draw. There was nothing that I enjoyed in the book other than basically the preconceived, other than just the basic concept of Las Vegas. After that, it just all broke down completely. And I would certainly never go back to the second issue.
Oh, man, you hit the nail on the head. I was actually... There's something on every page that I really liked. But it was not written well, in my opinion. And it was inconsistently conceived into art. Even the layouts of this book are not well received by me. I really didn't like that at all. Yet there is something compelling about the overall story. The outline of the story would have looked fantastic. I was reading this thing. I wish I could get this to somebody good and give it to them to redo for me. Yeah, but as it stands, unfortunately, I was really disappointed in the product that we got. It looked really promising and then just failed on all accounts.
Totally. All right, Chris, last one. Sex.
Sex. Yes, by Joe Casey and Peter Kowalski. I've never been a huge fan of Joe Casey. I know he has his fans out there, and his cartoon work is really, really good. I found this issue really interesting, yet had very little concept of what was actually going on in it. there's a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of interesting panels, and a lot of interesting scenes. But we never get a great overall view of this world he's creating. I think I'm in for number two just to see if they explain anything for me. I don't tend to have a lot of patience when they do this, but if they open up the world a little bit and explain some stuff that's going on, I think I could be in for this one. It may read better in a large run or a graphic novel.
This book was it almost seems like an interesting concept, and if he could write and if they could draw, but it pissed me off because there was those little color blocks over random words in the word balloons, which I saw no reason for. But I think the thing that got me the most was the fact that he spent the entire issue talking about, man, when I was the armored saint, you know, when you were the armored saint, boy, life before the armored saint. And I'm just like, would you just get to something? You just keep talking about life before when he was the armored saint, and we're not getting anything. Like, it was like there was a whole bunch of random, like, we're starting to tell a story 25 times, and that was the issue. 25 pages of 25 people starting to tell the same story. And I just didn't connect to this book at all. Like, yeah, I just thought it was a mess. So I'm not coming back.
Well, it's to me to wrap up. I was trying to divorce myself when I read this from, because Joe Casey sat on that panel on putting the graphic in graphic novels. He had pitched the book. And I tried to divorce myself from what he had said and try to figure out how much of that was actually in the book. I'm glad that you got more of it than I kind of did in my first read, Brett. Because I was really kind of unclear on who he had been, why he was away, and if he was a superhero or if he was some kind of, you know, industrial magnate. I'm assuming from the name that he's Iron Man.
I'm pretty sure he's right. Yeah.
So I like the art. I was intrigued by the story as far as a different kind of take on a different riff on a superhero story. The scene with the at the live sex show did make me laugh. There was a good gag there. No pun intended. The lettering thing drove me insane. I'm gonna read in blue the word approach, in blue the word cook, scenic, changes in yellow, thing is in blue, friendly faces is in blue, light voice back and officially. we have a one word balloon that is you are back, right? I mean officially. I'm not sure anyone would actually say it that way. I'm not sure. Like, is it supposed to be giving? It's not. I can't tell if that is for like, dramatic effect or is for emphasis. I don't know why blue is a kind of emphasis and yellow is a different kind of emphasis. It was so distracting.
It was just way too distracting.
So, you know, whoever it is that has there is a graphic design credit on this book right next to the letterer. I'm going to blame you rather than the letterer. I've chosen to blame the person with the graphic design credit, which in this case is Sonia Harris. So Russ Wooten, who is the letterer, you're off the hook. I'm blaming Sonia Harris, who is the graphic designer. So distracting.
Although I found that annoying, I just took it part of the artistic design because those pages that do have those color blocks, the colors in those panels are all blue and yellow. I just thought it was an artistic choice, an annoying one, but...
Well, that's why it loses for me.
I don't think those words have any particular emphasis, considering that they're strategically spaced in... the panels, it just, I think somebody just thought it looked cool rather than having any meaning to the actual words that are being said.
Well, and then there's a couple in pink, too. I honestly have no idea. At some point, someone's going to explain to me, and it'll be a lot like explaining any other kind of art. If you don't get it, you don't get it, and explaining to me why I'm supposed to like it isn't going to help.
I don't care. I don't need to get it. All right. Keith, take it. Go out.
Let's wrap this up. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at CubReporterK. If you want to send us a note, if 1 million moms now wants to boycott our show after saying the words
Winky
and Centaur Felicia.
Severed penis.
And severed penis. Then please direct your comments to comics@wetalkpodcast.com. And I will also direct you to the podcast network, of which we are a member.
Comics Podcast Network, yes.
Comics Podcast Network. That's what I said. Comics, yes. Podcast Network. And because Mo's not here, Griffin. That's Griffin. No one will get it wrong this episode.
Chris?
All right, I'm Chris _ We Talk on Twitter. And if I knew we could get boycotted by 1 million moms, we would have done episode 69 a whole lot sooner. I'm really looking forward to that. Speaking of other dirty stuff, we forgot to throw to my regular attraction, Comic Book Attractions, so it'll be coming up after the podcast. Brett.
Perfect. Well, I am Brett, Brett _ We Talk on Twitter. I'll point you to Comicosity for my complete opposite end of the spectrum Access All Ages column. It's really going to all corners here. But so I'm kind of torn, guys. I just don't know. For my death metal band, is Severed Penis or Centaur Fellatio a better name?
Centaur Fellatio.
Centaur Fellatio, Keith?
That's a great name.
Yeah.
I can see the album cover now.
All right. Awesome. So we are blissfully OUT.
Here we are again. It's Comic Book Attractions, the part of the show where I like to remind you of comic book films, both good and bad, that should be watched and enjoyed and appreciated for what they are. This week, I wanted to come to you and talk to you about Barbed Wire. But the guys last week, when I sort of let the cat out of the bag, that's the direction I was heading, said, no, it's show 69. You have to do something a little dirty. So I threw out a couple suggestions, but no. They wanted me to watch porn. Thankfully, the more modern porn industry gave me some really interesting choices. I thought about going with Batman XXX, but quite frankly, I love Batman way too much to sully his good reputation with a porn. So I chose Axel Braun's Avengers XXX, a porn parody. Although I have a little problem with the title, because if you have to tell people it's a parody, it's probably not a parody. But that aside, it's porn. Now, before I recorded any of these, I always watch the film. And I've had rules, because not everything I watch is extraordinary. And it's sometimes very tempting to fast forward through boring parts. But I don't allow myself that pleasure. So I had to sit down and actually watch a porn beginning then. Not that I have a problem with porn. In fact, I quite enjoy it on occasion. However, I have never watched a full 2-hour porn before. And I have to say, this one was probably a good one to start with. I was entertained, mildly entertained. I can't say I was glued to the screen, but the acting wasn't bad and the production value excellent. I think this is the only time we'll see a real live Quinjet in any movie. I thought that was kind of neat. But on with the cast of the Avengers. I'm not going to bore you with the porn stars' names or anything like that. I'm just going to give you a brief rundown of the lineup of the Avengers. We were first introduced to Nick Fury, Spider-Woman, Scarlet Witch, and Ms. Marvel. Oh, I almost forgot Hawkeye, and I may be actually intentionally blotting him out. He's a terrible, terrible actor. I cringed every time he was on the screen, naked or otherwise. They're sitting around the Avengers conference table, and in true Avengers style, bickering and wondering what to do about the Hulk. Then, arriving a fashionably late, Iron Man pops in, says, "You know what? You guys just can't handle the Hulk. He's my problem. Leave it to an A-lister," and takes off in true Tony Stark fashion. I have to say, even the Iron Man flight effects are quite effective. I was really quite impressed with them. I mean, this is a porn. I shouldn't see this. This is definitely maybe C-level movie stuff, not porno stuff. And since this is a porn, this is the time we sort of pair off, and the obvious ensues. Hawkeye with Black Widow, who hadn't been seen in the future before, but seems to be hanging out in the back room. Ms. Marvel and Scarlet Witch have a same-sex scene. And then we're back to Iron Man fighting the Hulk. And I doubt these two actors were ever in the same room at all. There is some roaring from the Hulk, and Iron Man gets punched and is thrown several miles. At no point did I see a connection. At no point did I see them in the same shot. It didn't really work, but once again, what are we dealing with here? Upon hearing of Iron Man's defeat, Nick Fury gets a little rowdy, and luckily he has what seems to be a secretary named Sharon Carter. Help him out with that situation. Now, I can't help but wonder if they would have been better served using Miranda Hill. She's a little bit more recognizable, and, well, I kind of wanted to see that. But I digress. Moving right along, we are then introduced to what for many people is the draw, including me, to this film. That's right, China as She-Hulk. Back in the day when I was living with Mo, I was subjected to endless hours of wrestling. And I have to say, I never quite understood his fascination with it, but I respect him, so I have to respect the, let's call it an art form of wrestling. But I did find several wrestlers compelling, one of them being China. To this day, the only Playboys I actually own are the ones where China appeared. So, seeing her in green makeup, having sex, was wonderful. It also appeared to the Star Trek fan in me. Green women, development years, something twisted in my head. I was really kind of excited about seeing this. But I have to say, the actual scene was disappointing. The makeup actually was excellent and didn't rub off too much. It did, but not so you'd really notice unless you were looking for it. She doesn't take off her top. And what's a porn without boobs? And China, that's sort of her draw. Without her boobs, some would classify her a man. And of course, the scene is with Goldilocks himself, Thor, in what I'd kindly classify as a Halloween store costume. Worst of the costumes in this. Really quite disappointed in the whole thing. But China did look amazing as She-Hulk. I was just a little disappointed with the scene itself. The She-Hulk XXX spinoff that I hear is happening, you know, I might check that out. Well, fool me once, fool me twice, I guess. The last scene we get is Ms. Marvel again, and now she's found a Spider-Man who seems to be whining about not being in the Avengers. And, of course, this leads to sex. It is a porno. I have to say, I find something about Spider-Man without pants and the costume fully there otherwise a little disturbing. I don't know how else you'd do it. Well, that's where the porno kind of ends. We end off with a team meeting of the Avengers. Half of them go off to fight the Hulk. The other half are sent for some mysterious reason to Antarctica, where they find, surprise, surprise, somebody frozen in a block of ice. I'll leave that one to your imagination. I'm just going to end off with a little bit of the trailer. That's it for me, Chris O.U.T.
The creature, known only as the Hulk, rampaged through Las Vegas last night during a battle with a similar monster authorities are referring to as the Abomination.
My name is Nick Fury. I'm the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. and your host for today.
The world doesn't come to a stop just because the Hulk comes around and scares a few people.
Hulk, you need to come with me.
If we are to be comrades, then we must be friends.
Can't believe you're not going to ask me to join your little club.
My cousin is a terrifying enemy.
Well, he's a lunatic.
Enough!
I mean, the Fantastic Four get the Baxter Building, and we get an old abandoned warehouse down by the wharf.
I don't expect anyone who walks around in a blue helmet to understand what we're doing here.